Today's first reading comes from a long tradition in the Jewish and the larger pagan world of what would be called divine hospitality, where you take care of the stranger that walks through your midst because you have no idea who that stranger might happen to be. So in the ancient Greek world, they would, of course, if somebody would show up at your door, then you would show hospitality to them. And this would go all the way around through the ancient Near East, because you wouldn't know who it might be a god hidden in disguise. And so if you don't show that kind of hospitality, then the god would express a certain amount of, let's just say, lack of favor towards you in the future. And this would actually be how some cultures would have, in a sense, a healthy interaction with the strange. Because one of the most dangerous things that can happen to a culture and to the heart is if it starts becoming too enclosed on itself. If you only hang out with people you agree with politically, if you only hang out with people who see eye to eye with you, very gradually your vision just starts to narrow. And one of the funny things in which this comes out in our culture today is our persistent fear of what we call toxic people. Now, yes, there are many people who are just particularly toxic, but if one wants to follow the metaphor, or the, not the metaphor, it's a truth, but the image, that's the better, the image that Paul gives us in our second reading today of the church as a body, we must remember that in some organs in the body, the other organs produce toxins. But they're doing their job. Their job is, in a sense, to provide the balance. So the kidney or the liver, they clean out the stuff that the other organs are putting in. And then somehow, in the miracle of physical and spiritual health, this balance then makes the body whole. And one of the ways in which we can, in fact, make our body sick is if we try to make things too clean. And sometimes our body can't, in fact, do its work. Sometimes when your kid eats some dirt and you're thinking, this is kind of gross, kids are disgusting little creatures, but somehow if they eat that dirt, they'll have a stronger immune system. This kind of metaphor, this kind of image helps us understand the rules and principles also of the spiritual life, that we do need overall a healthy balance. We need to welcome the strange and, yes, sometimes even the toxic. So when Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself, and this was articulated very plainly last week with the Good Samaritan and the explanation passage that happened in Deuteronomy from the first reading, that we must welcome even people that drive us nuts. So if you come to church and you're not being irritated by somebody, you're not praying right. People can be annoying. That's how you learn to love them. It's a boring and sterile church where we all see eye to eye. God is gloriously and wonderfully glorified in this diversity. But sometimes finding the unity is a difficult task. And sometimes we can also spend a lot of time doing something that, although it demands more time, is not necessarily primary. So we see this in the relationship of these two sisters, Martha and Mary. And they are very important in the ministry and the life of Christ. They are some of his actual most intimate friends throughout his preaching of the gospel. They are also the sisters of Lazarus, whom Jesus raises from the dead nearing the end of his public ministry in John's gospel. Martha is the one, well, both Martha and Mary say to Jesus when Lazarus dies, if you had been here, my brother would not be dead. And in one level, you can understand their frustration because Jesus waits a few extra days before he even goes to take care of them. That even they had to deal with, in a sense, this frustrating personality we know as the Savior. That we don't always like Jesus. But we gotta love him. So when Jesus comes to their house for one of the first or initial times, then Martha is, let's just say, she's the helper personality. She's the type of lady, she's the type of gal that's just always on the move. And we've met a lot of people like this, and they are absolutely essential. Mostly because I am not one of those people, and I depend on people like that. People that are able to see and to figure out problems, to be able to notice them, to be able to fix them, and to have this kind of energy and gusto to be able to pull it off. These are amazingly lovely people. But one of the, in a sense, downfalls of constantly be working is that sometimes in our day-to-day experience or interaction, we need to be very aware, not just of what we're doing, but who we're doing it for. And that's where Mary is incredibly important. Martha gets, in a sense, the job done. But Mary is sitting there next to Jesus, and she's listening to what he has to say. And Martha, I think, understandably, is a little frustrated. She goes to Jesus and says, "Make her help me." But you can see, in a sense, the cracks in the relationship right there. Because maybe it's not recorded, but in the very least, Martha doesn't go up to Mary and say, "Can you help me out a little bit?" The first thing she does is she goes for some third party. Jesus is it's a good third party to go to. But you notice that the most important thing is that if you got a frustration with your loved ones or with your sister or with your family, is to not go criticizing them to somebody else, but to actually just go up to them and say, "Can you help me with this?" And any one of us who've grown and let these relationships sometimes fall apart, it's because we don't actually articulate what we think we need. So she goes to Jesus and says, "Make her help me." And Jesus goes, "Martha, Martha, you have been distracted by many tasks. Mary has chosen the better part, and it will not be taken from her." And that bothers a lot of people. It really does bother a lot of people. Because we in our culture, we don't like anything being better than anything else. So our first understanding is, oh, then is he saying that what she's doing is not important? No. It's a part of a very profound tradition of taking care of people, of attending to their needs. But sometimes, and I'm sure you've noticed this if you've ever been shown hospitality by somebody, say for instance you're visiting a relative in Europe. You've just flown across the Atlantic, and now you've landed in England or wherever it is that you happen to be. You're dead tired, and then your relative then says to you, "Now let's going to go traveling, and we're going to walk around the town, and we're going to do all of this because you'd really, really like it. Now, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on." And then you try to pretend like you have the energy to be able to help this, like to actually do this. And then you go, boom. You just collapse. And the funny thing is I learned this because I actually did this to somebody, and I realized after the fact how insensitive I was. So you have this moment where you realize it's not just about what you want to do for this person to help them out, but it's getting out of your own thoughts, getting out of your own perspective, and realizing that they provide, in a sense, the counterpoint to how we see the world. And that is Mary's job precisely in sitting down next to Christ. What is it that you seek? What is it that you desire? And of course, Martha is indispensable, in a sense, for carrying it out. And we have to have both Martha and Mary in our lives. Now, Martha and Mary have also been symbolized in church history from two traditions in what we call religious life. The active and the contemplative spheres. Where the active would be those sisters or brothers that would teach in schools, take care of hospitals, do all of this different corporal works of mercy that are very necessary in the life of the church. Because if we do not care for the body, our spiritual talk is superficial. If God calls us into a deeper life with him, we have to know that we can't neglect the larger humanity in favor simply of the spiritual. That it, as even the scripture says, the letter of St. James, if somebody is starving and you say, "God bless you," and walk off. Missing something. But we in our culture have got the opposite problem. We've got lots of food. We've got lots of stuff. But we have very few people to say, "God bless you." Very few people that are willing to touch the heart. And a lot of our relationships marriage, family, friends in general, the one component that we truly are missing today is the Mary component. Because we're so busy. But if what we're doing, the busyness, doesn't touch home in a meaningful and relational way, then in the end, we become distracted. In the end, we do become slightly bitter, like Martha. And in the end, we do nothing but complain about how our brothers, our sisters, our spouses don't seem to love us enough. And I believe this is becoming more and more common in our culture. What Jesus really wants from us is the presence of heart to be able to truly accompany, to be next to be present with. And this is a treasure worth more than gold. You can have all the money in the world and be truly alone, and you can have just a few friends or one really good friend and have all the riches that the world can give. And this also can help us understand Paul's really obscure reading, today's second reading, which not Martha and Mary confuses people, and people don't like it very much. But today's second reading is particularly odd. I in my own flesh am fulfilling what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ for the sake of his body, that is the church. Now, Paul spends a lot of time, a lot, throughout all of his letters. In fact, I think it was last week in the letter to the Colossians where Paul says that Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. In him and for him, everything has been created. And then now he's saying that in this person in whom is all fullness, there is, in a sense, a lack. That doesn't seem to make any sense, especially when he's writing these two contrasts within about a few paragraphs of each other. Where on earth is he getting this? But this is the trick. And this is where, in a sense, a certain nuance is required in our religious reading. That yes, Jesus is the fullness in himself. He doesn't need people to help him. But he's humble enough to allow us. God does not need our worship. God does not need our praise. All of the offerings, all the prayers, all the service that we do for God doesn't help him one bit. Not at all. But he delights in your company. He wants you to be like himself. And he is the one who gives. And so in order to be like him, we must gradually transform the heart so that we are, in fact, like Abraham in the first reading, welcoming to people, that we are willing to share in their sufferings, so that we understand then, just as what we understand when we are in a hospital bed, when we are alone, when we feel lonely, what we really want is somebody by our side. And that is what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ. He has fulfilled the work of salvation already. God has conquered evil. But he wants to share his triumph with you. And most importantly, not as a slave, not as a carry-on, but somebody that is able to carry the banner of triumph into new life. That is his ultimate goal for every one of us. And this is where the humility of God also, in a sense, prevents him from fixing all the world's problems. He can't just fix them. If we have his heart, we will want to fix them on our own, but we will ask his help. We won't just busybody ourselves and other people's lives unnecessarily. We will know what they truly need. We will give them the space that they need, and we will give them the intimacy that they need. Martha and Mary need not be separate. They must work together in fellowship, as the heart and the head have to work together, as the liver and the kidneys have to work together. And so this diversity that is present in the church allows each and every one of us to play that small part. I, as a priest, can only do so much for evangelization. When I walk out there with my Roman collar on, as important as that may be, I scare some people sometimes. They want a friend to be able to tell them, somebody whose life they know, to be able to say, I have met Christ. I know who he is. He has made a definite impact on how I see the world, and it has always been for the better. We priests are useless without you. John Henry Newman said it really, really well. If there were no laity, priests would look really dumb. We'd just be standing here in our crazy clothes in the front of the people, and then everybody would be wondering, what on earth is the point? Everything that we do here is to strengthen you for what you do out there. Work with your hands, but always do it with your heart. You don't need to fix the world. You just need to love her.